Case number 19-5658, USA versus Willie Garth. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Rust, you may proceed for the appellant.
May it please the court. I'm Erin Rust. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Willie Garth, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine. You may proceed.
In Havis, this court held that the definition of a controlled substance offense under the guidelines does not include attempts. It then looked at Tennessee's crime of delivery of a controlled substance. And because Tennessee defines deliver as the actual constructive or attempted transfer from one person to another, it cannot be counted as a controlled substance offense under the guidelines. Here, Mr. Garth's prior conviction was Tennessee's crime of possession with intent to deliver. Again, deliver is defined as the actual constructive or attempted transfer from one person to another. Thus, the crime includes possession with an intent to attempt to transfer. Because it includes conduct beyond that which is covered by the guidelines, it was wrongly used to enhance Mr. Garth under the career offender guideline. I first want to address the McLean case. This was an unreported case out of this court. So of course it's not directly binding, but it's also not persuasive. First of all, the case was limited by the arguments that were presented by the counsel in that case. And the court concluded that Tennessee would not recognize the crime of possession with intent to attempt to transfer. In reaching that conclusion, it basically made two steps. So the first thing it pointed to was that there was no existing case law in Tennessee evidencing that use of the statute. And the second thing it pointed to was that Tennessee has a separate attempt statute that it uses. But focusing on the separate attempt statute conflates the two different portions of possession with intent. So it focuses on the possession element. In order for a crime to be considered a controlled substance offense, it cannot be simply a possession offense. This court has held in the Montanez case that possession alone is not sufficient to qualify as a controlled substance offense. You need the possession coupled with a sufficient level of intent.
Ms. Rust, if I may just interrupt, I suppose, for a minute. The weird thing about the argument here seems to be that the crime of possession to intent to distribute is complete when the person possesses the drugs and has an intention to distribute. The crime is fully complete, and you would never charge for possession with intent to distribute because the crime is complete before there's even an attempt.
Well, Your Honor, the possession is complete, yes, but possession is not sufficient by itself. We also need a sufficient level of intent. And
right.
Here,
intent to distribute, right?
Intent to distribute under the guidelines, right? The guidelines reference only completed offenses, intent to manufacture, intent to import, export, or distribute.
But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I could be, but if a defendant possesses a kilogram of cocaine and he intends to sell that over the course of the next month, the crime of possession with intent to distribute is fully complete, regardless of whether he's actually lifted a finger to actually sell the cocaine. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, the difference is that under Tennessee law...
Can you just tell me if that's correct?
The possession element is complete, yes.
The crime is complete, right? He could be prosecuted for possession of a kilo of cocaine with intent to distribute, just sitting there in his apartment before he lifts a finger actually to distribute, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, then there would seem to be never any occasion in the real world to get into the question whether for this crime the attempt was, you know, he distributed or wasn't successful in distributing. It doesn't matter. This crime is fully complete upon just that subjective intention. And so this would seem to be one of those crimes, like the court said, and I think Gonzalez, maybe theoretically we can come up with it, but it seems like this will never happen in the world, it seems to me. And Your Honor, I want to be candid with you about my concern.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I think it's important to look at what type of conduct possessing with an intent to attempt to deliver, what that looks like. And there's a difference between an individual who has possession of an amount of drugs and has a specific plan. I am going to go sell this to X individual later tonight. I have possession of it and I am intending to sell it or transfer it tonight. There's also an individual, on the other hand, who would possess an amount of drugs and intend to go home later that evening, call his buddies, see if they want to come over and share with him. And that is the type of intent that I'm talking about. He has an intent to try and see maybe if his friends want to come and join in with him. And the reason this matters under Tennessee law is because it reduces the burden that law enforcement has to meet before they can charge somebody with a distribution crime. So it does have real world possibilities.
And but there's never been an actual case like this. Is that fair? I mean, no record of one, right?
There is no reported case. That's true. But we know that Tennessee includes intent to attempt to distribute in its statute because it explicitly tells us that in the statute. And this court and other courts of appeals have held that when a state statute explicitly defines a crime more broadly than the generic definition of that crime, we don't need to resort to case law. We don't need to look to case law when the statute is clear on its face. And Tennessee also interprets its statutes this way. So in the case State v. Ivey, the Tennessee Supreme Court said that when a statute plainly covers certain conduct, it applies to that conduct regardless of whether there are any prior reported cases applying it that way. And this makes sense, right? Because if a statute plainly applies to conduct, there's unlikely to be little, if any, litigation about it. The government says, look, defendant, what you did clearly, explicitly meets the definition of this statute. The individual pleads guilty, and there's very little appeal of a guilty plea when it's a knowing and intelligent guilty plea based on the elements of the offense. So,
can I ask you this question? I mean, if a person, let's say, has a bag of marijuana, I guess is a bad example now, but a bag of powder cocaine, small bag, and this person says, well, I'm gonna go down the street and see if I can find somebody who wants this. Aren't they guilty right then and there of possession with intent to distribute?
They are guilty of, under Tennessee law, of possession with intent to attempt to distribute.
Why aren't they guilty of, under Tennessee or federal, it seems to be pretty much the same. Why aren't they guilty of possession with intent to distribute?
Your Honor, I think that it is important to notice the difference between Tennessee's statute and the federal statute because they are different. So concluding that Tennessee's possession with intent applies to attempts, an intent to attempt to distribute, will not kick out all of the federal possession with intent crimes. And the reason is, under the federal statute, we have 21 U.S.C. 841, which defines the elements of the offense. But also within that same statutory section, the Congress has set out 846, which is the attempt statute. Mm-hmm. So under federal law, all attempts are succumbed into the 846 statute.
Let's say a police officer arrests the same person coming down the stairs with the bag of cocaine the person who wants to sell it. The police officer arrests them right there. It would seem to me that that person is guilty of possession with intent to distribute, not an attempt to distribute, possession with intent to distribute as they're walking down that stairway. I mean, isn't that true?
I don't think under Tennessee law that is true, Your Honor. Explicitly in the statute, it provides a gradation for the type of conduct, the type of
plan. I mean, is it the quality of the plan that determines the difference between intent to attempt versus intent to distribute? Like we think, well, that guy, he's got a good plan. Chances are he's actually going to sell the stuff. But this guy's got a half-baked plan, so he's only guilty of attempt. I mean, that sounds a little questionable.
Your Honor, I think that there are different levels of culpability here. And just like possessing a large amount of drugs often has a presumption that the individual is possessing that with an intent to distribute it later, the government still has to prove that he has the sufficient level of intent.
Okay.
Tennessee statute, which is different from how the federal statute is applied. So the federal statute, all the attempts come in under the 846 statute, whereas in Tennessee.
Ms. Russ, could we look at it this way? Could you give us an example of a case of intent to deliver as opposed to intent to attempt to deliver? What facts would fit within one but not the other?
Your Honor, I think the difference comes down to what the plan is, how specific the plan is. So
the plan's to get rid of the drugs. So tell me when somebody might be guilty of intent to attempt, but not intent to deliver.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the party example that I gave earlier, where an individual has drugs, he's planning on having a party, and he calls his friends to see if they want to come over, and they might share with him, they might not, but he's not got a plan for a specific person or a specific individual. He doesn't have
a sure he has a plan. He has a plan to get a bunch of his buddies together and hopefully they'll buy it. Why is that any different than he's got a plan to go down on the street corner and hope the people that are usually buying on the street corner are going to buy it?
I think that the difference comes in where he has an intent. He has the drugs. He has an intent to see if his friends want to come over later and party with him. That's different from an individual who has drugs and has a specific plan to sell it to specific individuals. And I think there is a different level of culpability between those two crimes. And under Tennessee law, it scoops in individuals that are much closer to mere possession of the drugs than it does under the guidelines definition. And I believe I'm out of time.
Yeah, you'll have your full rebuttal time. Did you complete your answer for Judge McKee, you think?
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Richardson?
Thank you. May it please the court. This court has long held that a prior conviction under Tennessee's possession with intent statute qualifies as a controlled substance offense. Habeas does not change that conclusion. Habeas distinguished between inchoate attempts and completed crimes, and every prosecution under the Tennessee possession with intent statute is for a completed crime. And even if Habeas did apply here, the defendant's intent to attempt theory is untenable. First, as McLean explained, intent to attempt mental states are not recognized in Tennessee law. Second, even if the intent to attempt label were applied to a state prosecution under A4, to Judge Kethledge's question, it would not broaden the reach of that statute in any meaningful way. For those reasons, the district court did not err, let alone plainly err, in sentencing the defendant as a career offender. I'd like to begin by discussing this court's decision in Habeas. Habeas drew a line between inchoate attempts and completed crimes. The decision began with the assumption that when the word deliver is used in A2, it creates a form of inchoate attempt liability. It then went on to discuss the Evans decision, which was about inchoate attempts, and the holding of Habeas. Its final line is that the text of 4B1.2 makes clear that attempt crimes do not qualify as controlled substance offenses. That line that Habeas drew between attempts and completed crimes is all you need to resolve this case. Every prosecution under 417A4 is for a completed crime that is complete upon the act of possession. If you want to prosecute somebody for attempt conduct involving an attempt to violate A4, you have to rely on the separate criminal attempt provision, section 101. And that is why following Habeas in the Little case, when this court was looking at a defendant with two prior convictions, one of which was under section 101 for attempt and one of which was under A4 for a completed offense, the court held that the inchoate attempt is out, but the completed crime is in. And I think that gets it exactly right. As for the defendant's intent to attempt theory, there are two issues that I see with it. First, under the categorical approach, this court will only find a statute overbroad if there is some realistic probability of the statute being applied in the way the defendant suggests. And as McLean explained, that standard just cannot be met here. Not only is there no case in the A4 context using an intent to attempt mental state, there's no case anywhere in Tennessee criminal law that uses that mental state, and the intent to attempt mens rea is inconsistent with how Tennessee understands criminal attempt liability generally in section 101. Second, once again, even if Tennessee were to use this intent to attempt label in an A4 prosecution, it would not broaden the reach of A4. The defendant has not explained how a prosecution for possession with intent to attempt a transfer differs at all from a prosecution for possession with intent to complete a transfer. I think the closest we came today was this example of somebody having a party, but I don't see how possession with intent to have a party is possession with intent to attempt a transfer, unless it's also possession with intent to complete a transfer. So I don't think the idea of a distinct intent to attempt mental state gets you anywhere. And I think that alone is enough to resolve this case, because the categorical approach turns on the substance of what is being made criminal in state law, not the labels that might appear in state statutes. I'd like to also briefly mention the implications of the defendant's theory. 417A4 is a common predicate offense in Tennessee. It is often used to enhance sentences under the career offender guideline. And this court has long understood 417A4 rightly to be a completed crime which falls within the plain text of 4B1.2. If you look at decisions like Douglas, at no point did that case discuss application note one or principles in inchoate liability, because it understood 417A4 to be a completed crime. So there's no reason to think that Habeas would change that result. I'd also like to just respond to one point that was made about reading the attempted transfer language out of the statute. That is not a risk on our view of the statute. The attempted transfer language appears in the general definition of the word deliver, and there's no doubt that when deliver is used elsewhere in the statute, like in A2, to define culpable conduct, that it does add to the reach of the statute. It does broaden out the conduct in some way. The point here is just that when deliver is used in a mens rea element in A4, it doesn't add anything, because possession with intent to attempt is necessarily possession with intent to complete. If the court has no questions, I would just conclude by once again saying 417A4 is a controlled substance offense under the guidelines. It's a completed offense, not a crime affected by Habeas. And for that reason, this court should affirm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Richardson. You. Ms. Russ, you've got 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. It's important to look at Tennessee's general attempt statute here, because that really is beside the point. It's not, it doesn't apply to this crime. In McLean, cases that it looked at when it was talking about Tennessee's general attempt statute were all cases that combined the general attempt statute with an otherwise completed crime, an otherwise completed offense. So for example, the Burns case, which was cited by the government, combined an attempt to commit murder, which murder is itself a completed crime. And the same in the Mateko case, which was cited in McLean, it was attempt combined with child neglect, an otherwise completed crime. Our statute is different because our statute specifically includes the attempt within the substantive offense itself. And Tennessee has held this. There, when it talks about deliver under Tennessee law, there is not a separate crime of attempt to deliver, because the definition of deliver itself includes the attempt. So it's comparing apples and oranges, essentially. The general attempt statute does not save Tennessee's possession with intent to attempt to distribute statute. And this is more than labels. This is not just a label that we're pointing at. This is explicitly included within the language of the statute itself. And the Tennessee Supreme Court in the Mateko case explained that even when a statute complaint contains apparently contradictory requirements as to the precise mental state, the Supreme Court is still bound to apply the statute as written. The court said, we're bound by the law as it is, not as we would have it be. And to that end, we are not free to adopt constructions that are plainly contrary to the language of the statute. Here,
just one question out of curiosity. It's a little bit off topic. One of his other predicate offenses was Tennessee aggravated assault, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And you're aware that a year from now, the Supreme Court will have told us whether that, in fact, is a predicate offense?
Yes. Well, Your Honor, I believe the Borden case addresses crimes committed recklessly, the reckless aspect of Tennessee's aggravated assault statute, narrowly. So it's narrowly.
His wasn't a recklessness case? Well, I don't want to get it off track, but I mean, it seemed like there's a possibility that one of his things might be affected by what the court does.
There was a lot of litigation below about the aggravated assault, and the district court concluded that the government could prove that it was an intentional aggravated assault conviction.
Okay. All right. Sorry to interrupt you on that.
That's fine. If I may briefly conclude.
Very briefly, please.
The guidelines limit themselves to an attempt to possession with intent to complete a future crime. Tennessee is overbroad because it includes an intent to attempt to complete. We would ask the court to remand. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this afternoon. Very much appreciate them. The case will be taken under advisement. I think that concludes our calendar for the afternoon. So we can consider court adjourned.